Now, most of us are aware of the use of scaffolding to help when repairing or rebuilding an existing structure. Well, scientists are investigating the use of molecular scaffolding to treat eye disease. This, it is hoped, could help heal and regrow damaged nerve cells in the eye resulting from conditions such as glaucoma and other diseases. I'm joined now by Professor Keith Martin, who's involved in the research, and he joins us from Melbourne. Hello, Professor.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. I take it the weather's good.
Ah, we're in the middle of winter here. It's the Melbourne winter, so it's a bit of a shock. It's cold and blustery today, so it's not always warmer on other shores.
That's a surprise. Right, now tell us a bit about the research. And what are the aims of the research?
Well, my interest is in glaucoma, and glaucoma remains the leading cause of irreversible blindness worldwide. It can be effectively treated by lowering the pressure in the eye for most people, but for others, it continues to get worse and they lose vision despite treatment. And so the research that I do, and we've got lots of different strands to it, but the research that I do is designed to try and improve the outlook for patients with glaucoma that's not being effectively treated by treatment to lower the pressure in the eye alone.
So tell us a bit more about the scaffolding principle.
Well, what we know about the optic nerve, and that's the nerve that connects the eye to the brain, is that as it gets injured in conditions like glaucoma, its ability to transport essential molecules up and down the optic nerve is reduced. And we also know that the optic nerve in development is very good at growing to new targets and making connections. But as we get older and as we develop, we lose that ability. And so in adults, the optic nerve can't regenerate. And we think that one of the reasons for that is that the molecules that are required at the very tip of the regenerating nerve aren't getting to the right place. And so the strategy that we have is to try and improve that transport so that the right molecules get to the right place to allow the nerve to regenerate.
You're working with a particular molecule, aren't you?
We are, and so it's got a funny name. It's called protrudin, and it helps nerve fibers to protrude, if you like. That's hence the name. And I guess you can think of the optic nerve, what goes on inside the optic nerve, is a little bit like a railway line, and it has tracks that are the skeleton on the inside of the cell, and it's got railway carriages, and those are what are called motor proteins. So they're the little engines that move stuff back and forwards along the nerve. And what protrudin does is it couples the cargo onto those railway engines, so it helps them to attach to those railway engines so that they can get moved to the right place. And what we find is by modulating that protrudin in the adult optic nerve, we can improve the transport of these growth molecules to the right place. And it actually helps the nerve to regenerate in a way that it normally can't.
So basically, you think this can actually bring back function then?
That's right. And so what we are using this as part of a strategy to repair and bring back function to the damaged optic nerve. So at the moment, the extent of the regeneration is relatively modest. But when we combine this approach with other strategies to stimulate the optic nerve cells and also different approaches to make the optic nerve more conducive to regeneration, we can actually get pretty impressive improvement in the level of transport of these molecules and therefore, hopefully, in the function of the nerve.
That seems quite an exciting prospect, this.
Yeah, we've been surprised how well it's working, actually. We've been working on regeneration for a long time, and this is work that's been funded by Fight for Sight in the UK. And the initial project was work from James Fawcett and Richard Eva. They've tried a whole bunch of different strategies over the years, and this is the most effective method to facilitate regeneration that any of us have yet seen. So we're pretty excited about that.
And some of the research in other eye diseases, the benefits spill over into other conditions. Do you think this will be able to be used for other conditions in the eye?
Very much so. So, and not just the eye. So this work has come out of work that actually originated in the spinal cord, and so I'm collaborating with a bunch of people who work on spinal cord, traumatic spinal cord injury. And so what we're doing is actually sharing knowledge and sharing experience, and taking some of the things we've learned from the spinal cord and bringing them to the eye, and taking some things we've learned from the eye and moving them back to the spinal cord. And we're doing that in collaboration between Melbourne and the University of Cambridge.
Because I was thinking things like macular disease and also retinitis pigmentosa, the different parts of the eye, but they all involve nerve dying off, don't they?
They do, but one of the unusual things about retinal ganglion cells is they have these very, very long connections to make. So photoreceptors and retinal pigment epithelial cells just really communicate with their next-door neighbors, whereas the retinal ganglion cells have to dial it in, if you like. They have a long telephone wire that connects right the way back to the brain, and it's that sort of distant regeneration that requires all this fancy transport. That we're trying to improve.
What about eye transplantation then? Could it help with that?
Well, eye transplantation is something which is the holy grail, if you like, of eye research. And if you talk to some people, you might think, well, this is just impossible. We're never going to be able to transplant the eye. But this has actually been achieved in some animal models, and some function has been restored. So you know, clearly it's not ready for prime time yet. But the strategy that we're adopting is one that we call protect and regenerate. So in other words, if you are trying to transplant an eye from one person to another, first of all, after the donor eye is removed, you've got to keep the cells there healthy so that they have the potential to regenerate. And then you've got to, when you actually do the transplant, facilitate that regeneration by doing some of the things that we're doing now, like with protrudin, to help the nerve fibers grow back. So eye transplantation is a really complicated thing to achieve, but in animal models we're really making progress.
The treatment itself then, do you think it will be an invasive treatment?
Well, it depends what you're trying to do. So when we deliver protrudin to the optic nerve in a condition like glaucoma, we can potentially do that by giving just very small injections into the eye using varices. And that's very akin to what's being done for other diseases. So you know, patients with macular degeneration have injections into the eye often monthly for many years and tolerate them very well. This would just be a single injection, which would then allow the way that the retinal ganglion cells inside the eye function to be changed. So yes, invasive in some ways. Eye transplantation, of course, would be much more invasive. But I think what we were hopeful, if we can intervene early enough and regenerate while there are axons and nerve fibers still there, that would be a better approach than transplanting the eye. The transplanting there for the eye would be a very much a last resort.
So how far along are you in the research then, do you think?
Well, you never know how far you're along, and everybody, you know, wants to know whether this is going to be 2 years or 5 years or 10 years. And what I sort of always say to people is research doesn't progress in that linear way. It stops and starts, and sometimes nothing can happen for a while, and then you get a breakthrough which changes everything. So and those breakthroughs are almost by definition unpredictable. So you never really quite know, and often things come along out of left field and change things out of all recognition. So we're gradually putting the jigsaw together of how these mechanisms work, and hopefully from that these new treatments will come.
And at some point, will you be doing human trials with this?
That would be the aim. We've got human trials in progress at the planning stage for other approaches for glaucoma. We have a gene therapy for glaucoma, which was developed by our team in Cambridge, which has been acquired by a major pharmaceutical company, and that's progressing towards clinical trials now. It's in late preclinical development now. So there's a whole range of different approaches, and I think that will come before the sort of optic nerve regeneration will be ready. It's a lot more difficult as a challenge, but you've got to start somewhere. And as I say, we're making progress.
I mean, if successful, this would change the life of so many people right around the world, wouldn't it? Or has the potential to do that?
It has the potential. I wouldn't want to overhype it at this stage and get people's hopes up unnecessarily, because this is not something which we're ready to start recruiting to clinical trials for, you know, in terms of the optic nerve regeneration and the protrusion story. So that's, you know, it's a bit further down the line, but we're pretty excited about its potential, but we don't want to overhype it really at this stage.
Well, it sounds really exciting, and it's really good to know this and be in amongst it at the beginning of all the research. Professor Keith Martin, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll look forward to hearing your results further along the line.
Well, thanks very much, and thanks so much for giving me the opportunity to talk to RIB Radio.